existence.
What's up? This is Saul Williams chilling here in Montreal, here on CKUT. Peace.
We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war.
Yes, 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 we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and for the month of July, we are celebrating Native creators across Canada and internationally. And with us this evening is Richard Van Camp, a proud Klitschko Dene from Fort Smith in the Northwest Territories. He is the best-selling author of over 27 books for the past 27 years, and his novel, The Lesser Blessed, is now a feature film with First Generation Films. You can watch it on CBC Gem. Richard is an internationally renowned storyteller whose passion is helping others reclaim their family medicines. You can visit with Richard on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, YouTube, and at his official website, www.richardvancamp.com. Richard Van Camp, thank you so much for taking the time to be here with us this evening. How are you doing?
Neezy D, Kim, Neezy D, very good. Donna Tay, how are you doing?
I am doing well. I'm excited to have you. I was introduced to your work via a writer's group that I do every Monday morning, that I'm a part of every Monday morning, and they spoke about your work, and I said, let me reach out. I saw that you had a contacts page, and I said, let me see if I can get in contact with you to have you on our show to bring your work to the Black community, because I find that oftentimes, even though we live on the same land, there's a lot of information that we don't necessarily have because it's not it's not freely disseminated and shared. So like before, you were asking me if I wasn't in the Six Nations territories, and I was like kind of glitching because I really didn't know where that is. And to me, that's it's not fine, but it's good, because what it does is it opens up education, and it opens up more information and discussion and dialogue. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Bless you, buddy. Are you doing well, Kim? Are you doing good?
I'm doing all right. I mean,
you watching the stress? How's the on a 10? What with 10 being the
on
most
a
stress?
10. Oh well. Okay. The stress level can fluctuate, but I gave up the day job. So
did you?
Yeah.
What did you used to do?
I used to work at Canada Post. Well,
oh, so
throughout the pandemic, I worked at Canada Post. Yeah.
Okay, so were you actually on the street, or were you in the office?
No, I was in the factory.
Okay, so like the sorting.
Yeah, I was sorting all of your boxes, all of your Amazon and whatever other deliveries that you were having. I probably touched them at one point.
So could you smell pot? Could you smell marijuana?
Oh, yeah.
So all the time.
Yeah.
What were some of the others? You could smell coffee. You could smell perfumes. The jewelry
box. Everybody
lies about. I'm not shipping jewelry. I'm not shipping perfume, and then it breaks in the box and you can smell it.
No, it rarely would be. It has happened, but it's rare that we find boxes. But the boxes with the weed in them, for sure. That like,
wow.
And there's always just a waft. It's through the factory. We just smell it and we're like, oh, the companies are shipping their weed. All right.
Well, you know, I'm really good friends with our mailman Tim here in Edmonton, Treaty 6 country. And I just want to introduce myself properly. Si ho batsa gotso ete honey ho Edmonton na day. I'm so grateful, Kim, that we get to visit. I can't wait to get to know you a little bit better. You and I can see each other, which is lovely. You know, I kind of feel like you're cheating. You get to see my Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
You blurred out your background. This is not the community sharing that I thought we were gonna do. I get to see your Star Wars stuff.
All right. I will.
I need to see the good stuff on the wall. Wow, you've got a whiteboard. Like you're in it.
Yeah.
Are you a Virgo? I'm a Virgo. Like I'm very organized.
Yes. Virgo.
You're a Virgo?
Virgo, yes.
September 8th, when were you born?
11th.
Beautiful. September 11th. Okay. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm putting this in my calendar because I'm a Virgo. And I'm going to send you a big happy birthday, because this is what Virgos do. But when I saw the whiteboard with the color coordinated, everything that you're doing, I'm like, brother, this is good. Because underneath this laptop is my day planner, and I can't do it all on the phone. I need a physical. I need to know what's going on 3 months from now and all that good stuff. But
we are both on the same page, because I have my day planner. I have to put the stuff in Google as well. And I have to put it in my phone, but the most important is the day planner. If it's not in the day planner, it's not happening.
I know. You know, it's funny. I just got sent the Souk Teachers Confederacy or they changed your name. They just sent me a link to a gathering in 5 months from now. And I actually went bananas, because I went through all my emails, because I performed for them before I presented. And I actually wrote to him, I said, did I agree to present at this conference? Because I'm so sorry, I don't have any emails. Is it my spam? And they wrote, they said, no, just because you presented in the past as a gift, we want you to take part in this year's. So it really is true that if you love a Virgo, here's what I was told. If you love a Virgo, you can't surprise them. Don't surprise a Virgo. Give them work. We are the worker bees of humanity. We will just keep working, but let us finish the task at hand and then give us another task. But you can't interrupt a Virgo. So you can't say, oh, you said you were going to do a keynote on April 12th. And if it's not in the day planner, and I went through my phone and I went through every email, and I'm telling you, it's not there. And I every once in a while I scour the spam Gmail, and I'll find something. I'm like, why did you end up here?
Yeah.
I need you. You need to, I'm just going to escort you over to the main inbox. So you can T-bone a Virgo emotionally, spiritually, physically, right across the board. Surprise them. and watch your head pop off.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about you. How did you get to writing?
How did I get to write? That's a good question. So you want the juicy gossip? I love it. Okay, Virgo brother, I will tell you. So I grew up in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, which is on the Alberta border, Northwest Territories border, in the Western Arctic. It's on the 60th parallel. So we reclaimed the Western Arctic title from the Northwest Territories to Denendeh, means Western Arctic, or Land of the People, Land of the People. And I grew up, I was born in September 8, 1971, and I had just the best childhood, the best teenage years, because I became and I was baptized in pop culture. So you can see my Millennium Falcon hanging up on my wall behind me. I've got all my Star Wars set up here all around me. It's a palace. I never have to grow older because I'm still seven with all these cool Star Wars toys and my comic books. But growing up in Fort Smith, never got into drinking, never got into drugs, never had any, you know, thank goodness I never had any problems or challenges with my mental health. I think when you don't drink, smoke, do drugs, gamble, fight, cheat, you're walking a good road. I think life can be tough just as it is. Look at year three and still ticking here with this global pandemic. But I was so lucky to have the best friends, raised in a house filled with stories, my dad's incredible record collection, books. And then we had the drugstore that got the same toys, and the Northern store. In those days, it was called the Bay. Mm-hmm. They got the same toys, the same comics as every other kid in the rest of Canada. So growing up, we would read The Savage Sword of Conan, Mike Grell's The Warlord, Archie Comics, the same Star Wars micro collection and Action Fleet toys that were down in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, were in our community. And, you know, growing up, we had CBC, so we had Fast Times at Ridgemont High and, you know, the Beachcombers and, you know, Degrassi Junior High. We had Good Rockin' Tonight with Stu Jeffrey, Much Music. So we had the best of the Northwest Territories, like paradise. We were raised in paradise. Fort Smith, Northwest Territories, we have Pelicans.
Yeah.
We're the gateway to Wood Buffalo National Park. We've got 8-month winters. We built our own log house as a family. So, and we also had Dungeons and Dragons. That's where we spent our, you know, our Sundays and Saturdays and long weekends. As long as our chores were done, we were basically allowed to do whatever we wanted.
Of course.
And we also had access to our snowmobiles. So we used to snowmobile to high school. Wow. I don't know, too many Canadians, you know, some of us used to ride horses to school, right? And some of us used to drive skidoos, and that was us. And so, you know, so blessed, so grateful for my childhood. And I was a big reader, so I loved Judy Blume and Essie Hinton and Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Then I discovered Pat Conroy, and then I got into, you know, poetry and all that good stuff. So the answer, I'm getting to the answer here, Kim, and that is that when I was 19, I just realized no one was telling our stories. Nobody was writing about the beauty and the grace and the joy and the pride and the humor and just what an incredible life we have in the Northwest Territories. And at the same time, to document the sorrow, because, you know, residential schools really decimated our cultures, our communities, and we are still in the shadows of those culture eating machines. That was what they were designed to do. So my mother, for example, Rosa Washi, was taken when she was five. She went to two residential schools for 12 years. Her number was 12. All my uncles were taken, and 160,000 plus kids all across Canada were taken. Indigenous kids right across Canada were taken to day schools, mission schools, residential schools. And then there was the 60s scoop. There's the foster care system, you know, all of these policies that are meant to extinguish us as Indigenous people, which is still in place, let's be honest. So growing up, I just realized that I was in the shadow of those residential schools that my mother attended and was stolen for. And I always had these big questions, Kim, and the questions were, and it started my first day of kindergarten. So, I mean, you're 6 years old when you go to kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
I remember looking around, and it was a beautiful day, and it was, you know, September 8th, first day of school, is my birthday.
Right.
And looking around, and then we suddenly all had to file into French room. We went from homeroom to the welcome, and then we were taking French. And I remember just being six, looking around, going, why am I taking French? We're not French. Yeah. I want to, my heroes are Cree. I mean, we're officially a quadrilingual town. We're officially Chipewyan, Cree, French, and English are spoken at any given time. Fort Smith is the Métis capital of the Northwest Territories. Why aren't we learning Michif or Gwich'in or Mountain or Hare or Willow or my language, Lecho Dene?
Mm-hmm.
In those days, we were called the Dog Ribs. Why aren't we learning Dog Rib? My grandparents don't speak any English. Why do I need a translator to speak to my own grandparents, right?
Right.
But in the 70s, and you said you were born and raised in Haiti and Jamaica.
Haiti. I was born here, but I was raised in Jamaica and Haiti.
Okay, so in the 70s, the Trudeau government had a policy, and that was every Canadian, regardless of origin, would be bilingual, and that second language had to be French. And we were told time and time and time again, if you don't have your grade 12, you know, French, you're never going to get into university or college. You need that second language. And then, of course, when we went off to college or university, what you find out is if you don't have any money, you're not getting into college or university.
Exactly.
So we were lied to, and our parents assured us, you can always learn your language later. Just get that grade 12 French, and then you're on your way. You've got to get a post-secondary education. So we went in trusting this, what we were told, and it turned out, again, it was just a lie. So, you know, when you get to college, university, and you kind of look around and start to realize a few things, you know, I'm 51 now, mm-hmm. and I'm so grateful. I'm taking Tlecho 101 online, and I've got the greatest teachers. It's offered, the program is free for Tlecho citizens, thank goodness. And Georgina Frankie and Rosie Benning are the greatest, most patient teachers, and we spend more time laughing, learning our language. So I'm 51, Kim, but I'm still in kindergarten with my language, and I am so happy because I couldn't say, you know, Richard Van Camp, CA, Si Ho Butsa Go Tso Ete, Honey Ho Edmonton Nade. I couldn't say that 2 months ago, and I'm catching up. And for me to be able to write on my wife's Valentine's Day card, I wrote Nawu Netu My Sehoho. So I love you, my sweetheart. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even do that 6 weeks ago when I got to write that out for her. Right. And so that's great for me as a father and as a husband and for that sacred dancing little child inside of me. It's also great for our child, Zazie, to see daddy is learning. Daddy's learning more than just the basics. I wanna be functional, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be fluent. I've got this in me that I don't have to be fluent. Gotcha. I've got to be functional.
Right.
And fluent is great. It's a wonderful place to be. Right now, let's focus on getting it out and pronouncing it properly so that when my mom comes to stay with us, Tlecho is being spoken and celebrated in a really gentle and reclaiming way. It's the sweetest medicine. Language is the sweetest medicine, and it's the basis for your culture. So that, and you know, I remember it said 160,000 plus kids were stolen right across Canada, right? Yeah. So I'm part of the second generation, and what I'm finding is the 51-year-old Indigenous, you know, parent out there is doing their best to reclaim to the best of their abilities everything they can, not just for themselves, but for their children and for their parents. We are that bridge generation. I'm finding it, and it's a great place to be.
Amazing. And so it was through feeling the loss of language, and then coupled with realization that your stories weren't being told, that you came to decide to be a writer.
Yeah, exactly. So I just said, I remember I was 19, and I said out loud one day, nobody's telling our stories, and I'm gonna tell the truth. I'm just gonna change the name of the community. I invented Fort Simmer.
Okay.
Because originally when I wrote my first novel, The Lesser Blessed, it was called Me and Johnny. and that was a novella, and then it just kept growing, and then finally it became The Lesser Blessed. And I said it in Fort Smith,
right?
And then I realized, because I was already in college, I said, well, wait a minute here, I'm not the one who has to stand in the Northern lineup if I'm going to tell the truth about what it means to be a Northerner today.
Right.
I better fictionalize it, because if you fictionalize a community, readers can let their guard down and say, well, wait a minute, this isn't about my family. This isn't about my community. This isn't about my leadership. This isn't about my nation. I'm just going to read it. And then hopefully when I read it, I go, ah, that's exactly the way it is here.
Mm-hmm. I can relate to that.
Yeah, it removes the worry of having someone say, how dare you call down our community? How dare you call down our people? How dare you call down your own family? How dare you embarrass? But now, mind you, years later, we lost a dear friend to suicide. Mm-hmm. And that was the day I remember very clearly that I had written a story called Dog Rib Midnight Runners. And I remember saying, no, I'm not going to hide in Fort Simmer with this story. I'm setting it in Fort Smith because we need to talk about male depression.
Yep.
We need to talk about male rage. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about the men in our community who are afraid to reach out for help.
Yeah.
Because they don't know how. They're embarrassed. There's a stigma. And so I said, that was a really big day for me when I said, I accept full responsibility. I'm writing this story. I'm setting it in Fort Smith because we lost a son of the Northwest Territories and a son of Fort Smith. And we lost a father and we lost a son and a brother and a friend to suicide. And I had no idea that, you know, he'd been hospitalized several times before with depression.
Right.
And but it was secret. That's the thing is that everybody spoke about it after, but if only I had known, he was my lawyer, right? When I bought a little home for myself. Mm-hmm. And he had, you know, the perfect GPA at university, and he was just one of the leaders of our community. But had we known earlier, and so I wrote Dog Rib Midnight Runners, hopefully as a springboard for other men and brothers and fathers to reach out and say, man, I'm worried about you. You know, are you okay? No, seriously, are you okay? And if not, what can I do to help? Mm. We need to have these conversations because I still feel that so many of us as men don't know where to go when we're struggling or we're you know, that I asked you how's the stress out of 10, and when it's at a 5 or a 6, mm-hmm. you know, often we don't know where to go and we don't have the vocabulary for help.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I totally appreciate that. I mean, even in the Black community, we do have, especially with men, we do have those issues of not asking for help when we need it, not knowing where to go, even though the answer usually is very simple. Your friends, the ones you trust, trust them. But we're going to take a quick break and talk a bit more about that. I love this topic. Sure. That it came up so organically. You are listening to Soul Perspectives. We are speaking to Richard Van Camp, a proud Klitschko Dene from Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. He is an author, best-selling author, part of our celebration of Native creators, professionals, and artists for the month of July. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3. FM.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca. Thank you.
will sharpen my claws. Bare my teeth. I bare my teeth. One saliva string. One tongue. Cannot speak of the fight that comes from survival. It's from survival. Touch my children, and my teeth welcome your windpipe. Touch my children, and my teeth welcome your windpipe.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and as I said before, we are doing a special series this month for the month of July where we are celebrating Native creators, artists, storytellers, and we have with us Richard Van Camp from Fort Smith in the Northwest Territories. He's a best-selling author of 27 books over the past 27 years. And his novel, The Lesser Blessed, is now a feature film with First Generation Films that you can watch on CBC Gem. Richard, thank you so much. Already I feel... I love to say this when with my guests, when we have a conversation that is filling, I feel full, like I've had a good meal. I feel like the first course is like, was like all four courses and we haven't even finished dinner yet. Before the break, you were speaking about how one of the brothers in the community, the sons in the community, took his life, and you felt that with more communication, with more openness about what we're going through as men, it would have perhaps given him another option, or give other people who are feeling depressed, who are feeling that level, probably 6, 7, 8, 9 of stress, somewhere to rest, somewhere to lay down the world that's on their shoulders. Could you tell us a bit more about what you were doing and how you transformed that into storytelling as well?
Well, sure. I can talk a little bit about the story, Dog Rib Midnight Runners. So our dear friend, and I want to be respectful. I'll just keep calling him our dear friend and brother who we lost. One of the things that our friend loved to do in our community was, for whatever reason, they loved to streak. They would go out and they would get their buddies to streak with them. And it was just the most glorious, hilarious. You couldn't stop them. And I really wanted to honor that. So my little short story, Dog Rib Midnight Runners, I think it's in my short story collection, The Moon of Letting Go. After in the story, they lose a friend and brother to suicide. They decide to go running and streaking in his honor. Mm-hmm. And they want to feel as free as he did before things took a terrible turn. And I was so lucky after the short story came out, whenever I go home and I do a reading, and the pandemic has totally T-boned all of that. But before the pandemic, when I would go up to Fort Smith and we'd do a book launch, people would ask, you know, can you read that story? Can you read Dog Rib Midnight Runners? And I would say, absolutely. And I would get up and I would dedicate it to our friend and brother. And that's still the one where a lot of people, I think it's the most cathartic experience as a friend. I think it's an honoring, it's a gentle way of honoring his struggle and the pain that's left behind when somebody leaves us far too soon.
Yeah.
And my dear friend and Mohawk filmmaker, Zoe Hopkins, got in touch and said, I really want to turn this into a movie. And I said, sure, let's do it. So she and Big Soul Productions raised a pile of cash. We were going to shoot it in Fort Smith.
Okay.
And it was going to be huge for our community. But I remember one day one of the producers called and said, it's going to cost us $30,000 to ship all this gear. You guys don't even have a van rental place for gear or crew or anything like that. I just don't think we can shoot it in Fort Smith. And we're pretty devastated about that, because one of the things I love doing is spending money in our communities. So we spend $500,000 in Fort Smith shooting our new movie, Three Feathers, which is based on one of my graphic novels about restorative justice. So I remember Zoe called me, the director, and said, listen, I have $80,000, and if I don't spend it, I have to give it back to the Canada Council. Yeah. I've got three guys right now that are willing to strip down buck naked and make this movie in Six Nations. And I want to shoot your movie in Fort Smith, in Six Nations, but we can't call it Dog Rib Midnight Runners. I want us to call it Mohawk Midnight Runners.
Okay.
And I said, well, Zoe, the whole point was to honor our dear friend and brother who we lost and dedicated to his memory. And she said, Richard, we just lost another great man to suicide.
Wow.
He was Mohawk. This is a problem. Just a curse everywhere. Let me make this movie. Let's call it Mohawk Midnight Runners. I can shoot it for $80,000, and let's dedicate it in memory of your friend. And we did. And that's the power of Zoe Hopkins. I'm really grateful to her and Big Soul Productions, because I think that anyone who sees that movie, it's just a big weep-a-thon after, because I think we've all known suicide has touched all of our communities, all of our families, one way or another.
Yeah.
And it's, if we don't talk about it and we don't make it easier for anyone to reach out to get that help. And I don't know if you've read The King of Jam Sandwiches. Did you read The King of Jam Sandwiches?
I can't say that.
It's a beautiful book. So it's written, it just won the Governor General's Award. And it is a novel about a teenage boy who has a father with mental illness, and it's not getting any better. I really do think, and I really do feel that, and it's right here. I've got it right here. Excuse me just for a second.
No problem.
I always keep it close, but Eric Walters wrote it, and he's written over 100 books.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the book I really feel, The King of Jam Sandwiches, that's going to save lives. I do. I really feel like this is a book that kids are going to read, teenagers are going to read, adults are going to read, and when they're done, they put the book down and pick up the phone. They call the Kids Helpline, or, you know, here in Alberta, 811, and they just say, I'm in big trouble.
Yeah.
I can't carry this anymore. We're in big trouble at my house. I need help.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of kids carrying a lot, right? I think, you know, especially as parents, there's no fear like a parent's fear. And I think that the anxiety and stress we've all been under with this global pandemic has really taken its toll. And I think that it manifests itself in ways that surprise all of us.
Yeah.
So anyways, if you're listening, I would recommend you read Eric Walters, The King of Jam Sandwiches. It's such a great book. And I actually called Eric. I was lucky, my publisher, we have the same publisher, Orca Books. And I said, can you reach out to Eric? I just want to give him a call and sing his praise to him personally. And so he said, sure, he wants to hear from you. So I called Eric up and I just said, how did you do it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how did you do it? And he said, I just told the truth.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So anyone listening, if you're struggling, do what you need to do. Reach out, pick up the phone, mm-hmm. you know, call an elder, call your friends, you know, go out for a good coffee with a trusted friend. And, you know, I think this pandemic has really shown us how far away we live from our loved ones.
Yeah.
Our family members.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also shown us how fragile we are. We really are vulnerable, really, truly. I mean, you can only carry so much for so long before you start running on fumes, right?
And before you crack.
And the Globe and Mail, you know, before the pandemic, I remember they ran a poll. How many Canadians, you know, how many of you feel lonely? And 3 out of 5 of the people wrote in, this is before the pandemic,
that
were lonely, that, you know, they were in these rabbit trails they couldn't get out of, and it was work, home, Netflix, repeat, work, home, and trying to connect with other people. And I think that the three things we're all craving are community, connection, and culture.
Yeah.
And I think if you have community, whether, you know, I'm a big Star Wars guy, so we've got a Micro Machines group that is absolutely phenomenal, and I really care about all of our members.
Yeah.
You know, our little one, we went to the pop culture sale on Sunday, and we know several of the vendors now. They know us, they see us coming, they know they can go home early. Pinkies and brownies, 150s are going to be flying. No, I'm just kidding. it was more video games. We're not really into video games, but still, for us to be acknowledged and us to go up and shake some hands and see everybody is fantastic. My dear friend Shane Turgeon's got another huge pop culture show coming up next month, and so we're already saving our cash for that one.
Yeah.
But in terms, and also culture, you know, to be able to host, that's also been stolen from us. You know, yeah. We were before the pandemic. I mean, we were hosting, I swear, and I was touring, so I was on a plane two or three times a month. But, and I think that's why our home time was even more precious, because it was a chance for us to catch up and fill our love cups, because I love to cook.
Yeah.
Love to host. And I just, I really miss cooking for elders. And the curse of the pandemic is you have to stay away from certain people because you love them so much. And there's a risk that you could be carrying this and pass it along to them. And that's why, you know, here in Edmonton, Treaty 6 Country, we have had the best winter. It has been so mild. We've been outside. We've been able to host outside. And, you know, we've got a beautiful fire pit. One of the smartest things we ever did as soon as the pandemic started is I got an outside fire pit.
Right.
And we've got tons of wood. We can cook outside. We can host outside. We can have coffee, tea, chaga, whatever you want outside. We've got fire pits in the ravine. We can go and have an outdoor picnic. There's Elk Island. We can go out there. We went to an outdoor archery range. We became members. Our little one got into outdoor jackrabbits. Our community center here, everyone listening, get involved with your local community center. I mean, we've got the best team this year. They can't stop making free hot chocolate and giving away Oreo cookies. Nothing makes sense about this. I think somebody there won the lottery.
Right.
And they're just, this is how they're showing off a little bit.
Right.
But we, you know, to go skating, you know, we have just been so blessed. And, you know, look at the moon. I mean, the moon, I'm a lunatic. I love the moon. And so did you know on March 1st, the planets Venus and so this doesn't matter because this is going to be in July. Okay, don't worry about it. Just pay attention to the moon. I always ask Siri, when is the moon rise?
Right.
I do this just about every day, and she tells me she's never wrong, and I'm always there. If I can see the moon and I can see the stars. And do you notice now, Kim, that you crave being outside more than ever?
Me? No.
What? Are you serious? Are you an introvert? Are you shy? What's going on with you?
I wouldn't say I'm shy, but I do have introvert tendencies, and for the pandemic, I've been happy to be inside.
Okay.
It's.
Are you in a densely populated situation? You got a bunch of mouth breathers over there, and you're just afraid to leave your house, or are you a gamer? Like, are you playing Animal Crossing, and you just got it so good? It just fills you. Yes, obviously, yes. I'm getting
It's just that I think that because I was like throughout the pandemic, like I got my job at Canada Post right before the pandemic started, and then it started as part time, and then I was being called in for full time work. So most folks were working from home, I was. You know, outside every day, and I started wearing a mask before it was officially an official thing. So I guess the idea of not being of like being isolated and being inside, I was with my coworkers every day. I was with literally hundreds of people every day. So when I quit my job last year, I was one of those people who I needed help, but I also needed time to process everything I was going through. I lost my father at the beginning of in 2021, so 1 year into the pandemic. I'm going through a lot of personal things that affected me. I was in a relationship that was here again, gone again, here again, gone again. And I made some ties that were really, really strong with that person and very difficult to sever. So I was not in the best place, and like just hunkering down and being shut in my little home, in my little apartment, I was completely fine with that. I was like, this is good. I work from home now. I continued. The only thing is that I continued doing the shows, you know. Mm-hmm. I pre-recorded the shows and did all of them.
So you're in your bunker. You're protecting your heart. You're protecting your spirit. You're grieving.
Yeah.
I want to say I'm so terribly sorry that you lost your father. I'm so lucky to have two dads. That was my fear, was that we would lose somebody in our closest circle during this time and not be able to go and grieve the way that our community, you know, grief takes its own time, right?
Yeah.
I find that you are taking very good care of yourself. You know, if you know that, hey, I'm hurting and I don't need to be out in the world. I've got my show. So you're telling me this show that I'm a part of has been your salvation.
It's so my co-host left in 2020, in 2021, and I've been doing the show on my own since. And yeah, to a large extent, it has been my salvation. I've been able to have these kind of conversations. I've been able to record many, many shows in advance and have full conversations with people, dive deeply into their work, into their story. That was an interesting thing. I found out things about people that I had known for a long time. Last year was the first time that I had months where we had themes. So for the month of May, I celebrated Black Mothers. The month of June, I celebrated Black Fathers. And then July, obviously, we're doing it again with Native creators. And in October, I kind of did something a little different where we talked about death, because October is that transition month between fall and winter. And it's like in many different cultures, it's the thin veil between the realm of the dead and the realm of the living and all of that. And I thought it was ideal to have conversations surrounding death, and especially me having gone through the loss of my father. And I know a lot of people lost other people, not only during the pandemic, but at different points in their lives. And so we were able to have these beautiful conversations. And I just, being able to have these conversations, being able to talk to people about different things and themes and ideas and thoughts, it was really helpful for me. It was really healing for me to a large extent. Absolutely.
Can I share a little miracle story with you?
Yes.
To really honor what you've gone through. So I lost a really good friend of mine years ago. And I'll be respectful. I'll just call him my friend. I really want to be respectful. Mm-hmm. Known him my whole life. He was my first memory. Grew up together in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. The most hilarious, most charming, most loving, best hugs. And we lost him. And I was actually holding his feet when he passed away at the University of Alberta Hospital. And he left behind three gorgeous kids and the mother of his children and two grieving parents. And his picture came up yesterday on Google Photos. Wow. And you know how Google, like 10 years ago, you were here, and seven years ago, you were here.
Yeah.
And so I wrote to his father and I just said, I have the most beautiful photo I took of your boy. Can I send it to you? And I always ask for permission first.
Right.
Right. Why on earth would you ever want to just send a photo and trigger somebody out of the blue? And he said, go for it. And we've always had this agreement that, you know, and I don't know where this came from. I certainly would never want to be triggered, but it's always like, ask first. And if he doesn't respond for a couple of days, that's fine. He's busy. Mm-hmm. Anyways, at the beginning of the pandemic, do you remember the day, Kim, when they put yellow tape around all the outdoor playgrounds? Do you remember that?
I don't remember the day, but I do remember seeing it and going, this is disgusting. I don't like this.
Yes. Well, as a father to a little one who was five in those days, it really, when we needed community the most, we couldn't really go into these big safe spaces and just talk as parents and let our kids be with other kids, right? Because we really didn't know what we were dealing with. Anyways, I had a miracle happen the day that they took the yellow tape off. And what happened was I was walking with Idzazi, our little one, our sweet miracle, and I got really mad at my friend for leaving us. Mm-hmm. I got really mad, really mad. And I was just saying, God, your kid, I'd just taken his kids out and his mom out for lunch the day before. They were in town here in Edmonton. And I just said, I just can't believe you're gone. Like, your kids are so beautiful. They're so gorgeous. They're so strong. God, they're taller than me now. Mm-hmm. I'm shrinking and you're not here. And it's a beautiful day. And planet Earth is so boring without you. Mm-hmm. I can't just pick up the phone and hear one of your zany stories or joke about something that happened to us. Or, you know, we had our own language and our own, you know, galaxy of memories and shared stories and secrets. And anyways, I just got mad. I was like, I just can't believe you're gone. Golly.
Yeah.
So we get to the playground and the yellow tape. This was the day all the yellow tape had been taken off all the play structures. But what we used to do, because I'm a worry wart, I'm the weak link in this family with the worry. who knew this was coming? Anyway, what we used to do is we used to spray Zazie's little hands. And then they would play, and then they would come off. We'd spray their hands again, and then we'd go home and we'd do the big wash with soap.
Right.
Because we didn't know what we were dealing with COVID, right?
Of course.
And, of course, everyone we know was there. All the kids are playing on the play structure. Everybody is – it was just the most beautiful day. And I go and I put Zazie's little red backpack down, and Zazie goes racing onto the King Edward play structure. And I go, oh, shoot. I say, it's Ozzy. Sorry. Can you come back? Daddy just wants to spray your hands. And Ozzy goes, okay, Daddy. So comes back. And I turn. My dear friend had left me a dime.
Wow.
Has your father left you a dime yet?
No, but he visits me in my dreams regularly.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that, because there's something else that happened after this. And, you know, I'm a Virgo, and I used to be a paper boy. I used to sell the Slave River Journal for 25 cents a paper.
Wow.
If I see a dime anywhere on the continent, I'm taking it. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Anyway, and it was the shiniest, most beautiful dime.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went, it's Ozzy. Look what Uncle Trevor left for us today. And Ozzy took one look and went, great. Spray my hands. I want to go play. So I sprayed Zazie's hands, and Zazie went running and playing with all their friends. Beautiful day outside. Everyone's safe. And I kept that dime in my left hand, and with my other hand, I actually called my friend's mom.
Right.
And it's the same number I've been calling for 41 years.
Right.
It has never changed. And she picks up, and she says, hello. I said, hello, Auntie. Hello, Richard. I said, you're not going to believe what just happened. She said, try me. I said, I'll be honest with you, Auntie. I've known you my whole life. I would never lie to you. I got a little bit mad at your boy today. I'm going to be honest. And I think that's part of grief. I think that's got to be the part of the grief. You negotiate, you barter, you weep, you laugh, there's triggers. Birthday. Yeah, there's a birthday. There's Christmas. There's the kids' birthdays. It just, when does it end?
Yeah.
Is this the price of love, that it just, you keep losing precious loved ones the further you get along, right?
Yeah.
And I said, I just got mad at your boy today in Edmonton for leaving us far too soon. And she said, you got mad at him too, hey?
Mm.
I said, yeah. Yeah, I did. And I said, I'm not sorry. I think we're allowed to be a little bit mad at him for leaving us. And I said, but I want to tell you something. I put my little one's backpack down. We're outside Edmonton here, gorgeous day. your boy left me a dime. He left me a dime. And I said, I've always heard of people being left dimes by their loved ones who are on the other side to let them know that they're okay. Mm-hmm. And for you to live a good life and that one day we'd see each other again. I said, I swear to you, Auntie, I'm holding this dime in my hand, and your son left it for me. She said, hold the phone, I'll be right back. And she left, and I thought, oh man, shoot, I hope she's not, you know, we've cried many times together over the loss of her son.
Yeah.
And she came back, she said, you still there? I said, yeah. And she was holding a cookie tin, you know, sorry, yeah, a cookie tin in the shape of a heart filled with dimes. And she went, whoosh, 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 dozens of dimes. She says, my boy and his sister, who they lost to cancer,
right,
leave us dimes all the time.
Wow.
My boy finally left one for you. And I was floored. I was humbled. I was filled with, there's no words. And a little while later, his eldest child was turning 16, and I sent a gift, and I put that dime there, and I said, if you ever miss your dad, you hold this little dime close, because this is from the other side. This is from your father. And then a little while ago, Izazi and my wife found three dimes, and we just kept, they kept finding them. And I was like, what is this from my dear friend? Is this, why would this? And then sure enough, the next week, I got a call from a friend of mine saying, well, you know, it was so-and-so's birthday last week, and it was his birthday, and he left three dimes for his daughter, his other son, and the mother of his children.
Wow.
So everybody has dimes now. And then he actually came to his middle son in a dream. And he said, I want you to know I'm not suffering anymore. He says, I'm cutting hair in heaven. I get to cut hair all day. I'm so happy.
Wow.
He says, yeah, I visit, I gossip, I laugh. And I'm one of his best friends. And there's 100 guys that'll stand up, Kim, and tell you, they'll swear on the Bible and holding an eagle feather, that I was his best friend. And right. And we'll all be right.
Yeah.
And that speaks to the beauty of our friend. Mm-hmm. But he said, tell everyone I'm happy. I'm not hurting anymore. I'm home. And when the time is right, he says, I'll see you again. Mm-hmm. He told that to his middle child in a dream. So I'm glad that your father's coming back, because I do believe our dearly departed want us to be happy, want us to be safe, want us to laugh again. And, you know, grief takes its own toll, and it never ends. I don't know if you ever get over, but you move on celebrating the time that we had together. Yeah. And I think that makes things even more precious, so that you start to say there's a wisdom and a grace to things now, where you go, I don't know how much time we have with one another, but I'm certainly going to do the best I can with my roles and responsibilities. And you start focusing on how you want to be remembered while you're here. I want to be the best dad. I want to be the best husband, the best son, the best friend, you know, and I want to make people laugh. And, you know, you invited me here today to talk about Gather, this beautiful book. And when you read Gather, it's called Richard Van Camp on Storytelling. I think that's what it's called. What's it called again? Gather, Richard Van Camp on Storytelling. Yes, University of Regina Press.
Yes.
I've been so lucky, Kim, to interview elders who have passed away and have come back and talk about what's on the other side. And for our listeners, you don't have to buy the book. You can go on Richard Van Camp's SoundCloud. At the beginning of the pandemic, I decided that I was going to digitize all these little micro cassette tapes, because I was the handy bus driver in our community in Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. And I was able to interview so many of our elders and digitize their stories. And the technology now, thank goodness, look at us. We're on Google Meets, right? We've got FaceTime. We've got, you name it, we've got it, right?
Yeah.
But I started to digitize all these recordings I did in 1991, 1992. And you can go on Richard Van Camp's SoundCloud and you can listen to Maria Brown. Maria Brown was a wonderful Chippewyan matriarch in our community. She was using goose grease to cure asthma. Mm-hmm. She had that gift. And she was the one that told me that she had passed away in her sleep and had seen the other side. And she talks about what she saw. And she was the one who said, "You want to know what heaven's like, Richard? Heaven's like West Edmonton Mall." She said, there's bridges, there's floors after floors. Everybody's happy. Everybody's 24. Oh, my God. And the lights and the colors. And you can actually, don't waste your time with me. Go on Richard Van Camp SoundCloud and you can. So I went back to her house the next day and I tape recorded her with her permission.
Yeah.
And she, you can hear what she says about the other side, the spirit world. And then a year later, I was in Penticton at the Anoukan International School of Writing, studying creative writing and storytelling. And I got to meet their elder in residence, Glenn Douglas, who was 65 years old. And Glenn was an Okanagan elder. He served in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. And I asked him if he would share a miracle story with me. And he shared about being hit with a concussion grenade in the Korean War that killed him. And he talked about the other side. And that's in Gather. But you can actually hear Glenn Douglas in 1992, 65 years old, sharing. And the beauty of both Maria Brown's story and Glenn Douglas's story is they both heard a voice that spoke to them. And the voice said to Maria, "Maria, you can't stay. You still have work." And she didn't want to come back.
Right.
And with Glenn, this veteran soldier, the voice said, "Glenn, you can't stay. You will be told many times you will never walk again. You will walk again. Have faith. Glenn, you can't stay. You still have work." And they were both sent back. So you can hear in their own words their retelling of you know, their purpose. And I think that is why, I know that's why we're here. We're here to work. We're here to serve. We're here to help each other, to do our very best. And when we're called home, it's because our work is done.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, for the rest of us who are left down here, right? And you know, my neighbor says, heaven isn't 30 miles on top of the planet here. Heaven is all around us all the time. Mm-hmm. So to the listeners out there, that's why I always say, you know, with everyone I've always talked to about this, is look for those ladybugs. Mm. Look for those double rainbows. And look for those dimes. And, you know, Trevor, you know, and my dear friends who I've lost along the way, what I'm finding is that when I really miss them and I'm near tears doing the dishes by myself and I'm listening to the radio, our favorite songs always come on.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it, but they do it. They circumvent the DJ process. And I know they're with me because they want me to be happy. They're urging us on.
Yeah.
And I hope that helps. I really do, Kim. I hope it helps. So keep an eye out for those dimes. And I'm so glad your father's coming and visiting with you, you know, as a father to a child that, you know, there's no distance. There's nothing that can stop a parent's love.
No. One of the things that I understand is that no matter, we're all connected, and we're all connected not only spiritually, but through our DNA. I look at pictures of my son and I see his grandfather in those pictures, in his eyes. There's a certain way that he will look. And I look at pictures of my father and I'll see my son. And in the dreams, when I tell people about the dreams, I don't think I've spoken about this. I feel like I'm tapping into a multiverse. Because especially in the first dreams that I had, and I've had many, I would run up to my father and give him a big hug, and he would look at me strange, like, "What's wrong with you? Like, I just saw you like 5 minutes ago. Why are you behaving this way?" And I'd realize that this person is my father, but he's not my father from this dimension. It's my father from another parallel dimension. And there would just be like little subtle things in the way that he was dressed. My father was bald. This iteration of him would have a full afro. This iteration of him would be living in Montreal instead of Jamaica. So I get to experience him, but very, very differently.
Also, I wanted to say thank you for sharing those experiences, because, as you were saying, grief is a very complex thing to move through. It's like you kind of have to go through all the seven stages of grief the same way that someone who's an addict has to get over their addiction. You know, you go through acceptance, denial, anger, frustration, all of those different, that whole spectrum of emotional roller coaster in order to get to a place of peace. And I say to people, because I don't know, I've kind of been pulling people towards me who have been go through grief, and I've been seeing a lot of posts on social media, and I can't stand when people say, "I'm sorry for your loss." And there's something about that doesn't feel right. And so what I've taken to telling people is, I hope that the love and the memories and the happiness that you have for the person grows around your grief, to the point where there's moments come and bring you to a place of sadness, that those memories of love and joy and happiness will lighten the load of that grief, that moment of grief, because that moment of grief is valid. Your moments of anger are valid. But I want you to have the joy, the memories of joy. And those are the things that, for me, really allowed me to move forward. Because I wake up and some days I'm like, oh, you know, I see a picture of my dad and I'm like, oh, there he is. And then I have to remind myself that I can't pick up my phone and call him, you know? But this is Radioland, and we do have to take a brief pause. We're going to play some music, pay some bills. Thank you so much, Richard Van Camp, for being here. Looking forward to the next stage of our discussion. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3.
When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook.
I'm not afraid of the dark.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening, my storytelling guest this evening, is Richard Van Camp, a proud Klitschko Dene from Fort Smith, Northwest Territories. He's the best-selling author of 27 books these past 27 years, and his novel, The Lesser Blessed, is now a feature film with First Generation Films. You can watch it on CBC Gem. Richard is an internationally renowned storyteller whose passion is helping others reclaim their family medicines. You can visit Richard on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, YouTube, and at his official website, richardvancamp.com. Richard, thank you so much. This has been a wonderful, wonderful conversation for me. I was speaking, I love that in your bio it says that you're helping people to reclaim their family medicines, because I was speaking to a friend today, and it was the first time that we actually spoke one-on-one. We had been speaking in a group before, and they were telling me about how they had their first stroke at 9 years old. Then they had their second and third stroke at 22 years old, and doctors were completely baffled by this. And they became a writer. And how they became, what happened in their writing, they start, because at 4 years old, they fell in love with books. And then after they had their first stroke at nine, they couldn't read anymore. After, if they read for longer than I believe it was 30 minutes or so, they would have a seizure. And so what that, and then they also fell in love with writing, and they couldn't write for long periods of time. At one point they said that they could only write 15 minutes at a time per week at most, or every 2 weeks, because otherwise it would trigger their seizure. And so they had to create a way to write and to tell stories, so that folks with, I guess you could say, invisible disabilities, disabilities which are not visible when you look at them, could read and be able to consume a story without it triggering I dare say their neurological disabilities, because it's a neurological dysfunction. And I just found it so amazing. And I said to them, because they had multiple people come back and say there was someone who was going to commit suicide and read their book and was able to heal from that. And another person who was going through depression, anxiety, and read their book. And I said, you're a healer. Your healing is words. And I find that I don't believe in coincidences. I don't believe in coincidences. Reading your bio and finding that people, helping people to find their family medicine. How did that come to you?
Well, good question. I think it was Maria Brown. So when I was the handy bus driver, when I graduated from high school in 1989, I had to go back for half a semester, so 1990, to get my matriculation. So when I graduated from high school, I didn't go to college or university for a year. I just said, I'm not going to go into debt. I'm not going to go somewhere and pretend like I know what I'm going to do or who I want to be or what I want to be. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay home and I'm going to live a life of service.
Yeah.
I'm going to live a life of service. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to take some time for me. I'm not going to waste any more time being bored out of my tree in a classroom anywhere.
Right.
I don't care how sexy the city is. So I became the handy bus driver, but it was really when Maria Brown, one day when I was driving her, our Chipewyan bush cook and healer of asthma, she was the one who said that heaven was like West Edmonton Mall. Mm-hmm. When she said, do you want to know what heaven's like, Richard? And I said, yes. She said, heaven's like West Edmonton Mall. When she shared that story with me, which you can listen to on Richard Van Camp's SoundCloud, in her own words, the actual recording the next day when I went back, that, to me, that epiphany that if I would go to Radio Shack and for $23 buy one of those little tiny microcassette recorders and go and spend time recording Maria and all the other elders in our community, mm-hmm. It hit me that no one was recording our elders. Nobody was recording and transcribing word for word and then going back and getting their permission to either add to the transcript or delete a bunch of stuff because maybe they were worried their older sister would get mad at them for talking about this. I started to chronicle our elders, and I had this little tiny chapbook called, it was called Stories They Told Me. Mm-hmm. Originally it was called Heroes, and then I kept finding more stories, so then it was Stories They Told Me, and then it became Tracking Heaven, which is now 24 Indigenous elders from right across Canada sharing the most beautiful miracle stories. And I share this with as many people who want to read it, and every storyteller has been paid. I've interviewed people who have been saved by spirit. I've interviewed mm-hmm. people who have been saved and shown, you know, the beauty of the universe, the kindness and generosity of the universe. I've been so privileged. So not only do I record elders and people who've had miracles happen to them, mm-hmm. I love haunting the archives. You know, there's the Roman Catholic Diocese has archives in Yellowknife, and anytime I'm back in the city, I will go there and I'll talk to Father Jim, Padre Jim. Sometimes I speak to the bishop, and I share with them a beautiful miracle story that I've heard, and then I get permission to go down into the basement in the diocese archives. They have thousands of our photos from all across the Northwest Territories. Thousands. Right. Thank goodness that, you know, the priests and nuns were such great photographers. Thank goodness people have donated their slides, their family photo albums, community archives. And what I love to do is I love to, you know, every camera has a super HDR scanner. If you go into Notebook on your iPhone, for example, you can scan documents professionally without touching them. They can be behind cellophane and you can scan them. So what I can do in an hour is I can literally scan professionally 70 photos from the thousands of photos there. And then what we do is that we started a group on Facebook called Memories of Fort Smith, Northwest Territory. It's my community.
Yeah.
And then once I get home and I'm back on my mom's Wi-Fi, I upload all those photos. And one of the smartest things anyone can do right now for their own family photos is put names and dates beside them.
Yes.
We're really lucky because whoever's been taking care of these archives has done a great job of documenting most of the photos and who the subjects are. But the greatest, coolest thing that's happened is a lot of people have never seen certain photos of themselves as kids. I love, if I were to say, you know, Kim, I have photos of you when, you know, you were 4 years old that you've never seen. Wouldn't you want to see them? Or
absolutely.
I have a picture. Yeah, I have a picture of your great-grandmother, 1927, before she was a mother. Wouldn't you want to see that photo? Or if I say I found some of, you know, your parents' wedding photos, or I mean your baptism photos, that's what I love doing.
Yeah.
So I will upload 70 photos and then my phone blows up because I can see shared comments. But the coolest thing is if you go on Memories of Fort Smith, Northwest Territories on Facebook, you'll see this for yourself. There's a picture of a mother and a daughter, and the daughter's quite little, like still probably, let's say, 4 months old. And this is one of the photos that didn't have a name to it, but now, of course, they do. This daughter actually says, "Oh, mom, is that us?" And the mom responds in Facebook in the comments, "Oh, my God, was I ever that young? My girl, that's us." And then they start laughing. They'd never seen that photo of themselves.
Wow.
That's what I love doing. I love recording elders. I love digitizing drum dances and tea dance. So if you go on my YouTube channel, I was so lucky. There was a great dog rib or cleat show producer named John Gaughan, who's still with us, going loud and proud. You couldn't stop him if you tried. But he documented hundreds of hours of tea dances, drum dances, love song competitions, Canada Day celebrations. And he had a great recorder. He had a great sound system. The sound is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was gifted all these DVDs of these, I mean, hundreds of hours. And I mean, there's our Grand Chiefs, there's the late and great George Blondin, there's one of our matriarchs, Elizabeth McKenzie, there's my cousin Kelly, who we just lost in a horrible traffic accident a couple of years ago, dancing. There's Rosa Mantla, one of my all-time go-to matriarchs. I can't do what I do without my auntie. Happy, dancing, in community, right? I found a love song. You can go on Richard Van Camp YouTube. You can see my late grandmother, Melanie Washi, singing the most beautiful Dene love song. You can see my Uncle Eddie singing the most beautiful Dene love song. We didn't know that those were even out there. I mean, I'd always heard that, you know, people said, did you ever hear that recording of your late grandmother singing a love song? I looked for 9 years. I didn't know it was a video. So the greatest gift that I was able to gift my mother, and all my brothers and my entire family, is our late grandmother singing this beautiful love song. And for my cousin Christopher, who we lost in a horrible traffic accident, I know it's tough, but for his family, there he is dancing so many times in all these videos, and he's laughing. And if and maybe this is that island just for a little while to see them again. I think this is soul work. This is why I was born, was to haunt those archives, record those elders, and share those stories. You know, and I'm 51 now, so I'm really lucky because I'm that guy that can say, I can remember when you were in your mother's tummy.
Yeah.
And not only can I remember that, I have a recording of your great auntie, Seraphine, sharing a story in 1991. What's your email? I'll send it to you if you want to hear Seraphine's voice. And to show you how profound it is. So my message to everyone today is, don't wait to record your elders and your loved ones. Record them. And here's why. So in 91, when I was the handy bus driver, I recorded probably 8 of our matriarchs. And so that is quite some time ago. A couple of Christmases ago, I digitized one of the stories that I had on a micro cassette. I thought I lost it, and I found it. Thank goodness I'm a Virgo. I found it. Thank God we're Virgos, Kim. Okay. So I digitized it, and the younger generation now, the 20 somethings, the 30 somethings, it's their time now. They're running the world. They understand the technology. I certainly don't. My other message to everyone listening is, never be afraid to ask for help.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole pile of techies out there who are just waiting. And so my technician angel is Lee Skidmore here in Edmonton. She works for Bear Paw Media. And I had all these DVDs that John Gaughan had recorded in 1990, 1991, 92. And he said, Richard, I'm too old and I'm too tired. I don't know how to do this. You want to digitize them, put them up on your YouTube channel, just give me full credit. I said, okay. And I got a little grant at the beginning of the pandemic, and I had this money, and I said, Lise, can I pay you? She has every computer, anything, we're talking VHS, Beta, Laserdisc, she can digitize and upload it to the stratosphere.
Right.
And she wouldn't take it. She wouldn't take any money.
Wow.
She says, I'm doing this as a gift, Richard. You've got hundreds of hours of beautiful footage. It's going to take me a week to get it into all the formats, and I'll drop off a bunch of thumb drives. She did. So never be afraid to ask, because we're doing our work. Let the techies do their work in helping you.
Exactly.
But long story short, pardon? Sorry?
I said exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Let people who know what they're doing, do it. Stop trying to do everything yourself.
I really don't think we're not supposed to do things by ourselves. I think that, you know, I think collaborating is a dance of trust. And I think that when you are doing really good work, the right people will be there to help you.
Yeah.
But for me to have John Gaughan's permission to upload all those dozens of hours on YouTube, and for me to record Maria Brown and Glenn Douglas and all these wonderful elders. But here's why I'm trying to get to where I'm going. So a couple of Christmases ago, I emailed a digitized story to a young person in Fort Smith. She was able to burn CDs, go to, you know, the equivalent of Radio Shack now in Fort Smith, and buy a bunch of little thumb drives. And that's all everyone got for Christmas.
Right.
Was this story of her great auntie which was somebody's mother, which was somebody's auntie, somebody's cousin, because this is from a huge family.
Yeah.
And the night before Christmas, they had a huge family feast in Fort Smith. And the story goes that this young person that I sent this recording to, mm-hmm. I just emailed it once. And, you know, Facebook Messenger converts just about anything into a format that the other person can receive for free.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So long story short, the night before Christmas, they had a huge family reunion, and this young person, we'll call her Sally, says to her uncle, "Uncle, remember in 1991 Richard Van Camp was the handy bus driver?" And uncle responded, "Yeah, you know, big tough guy. One of the toughest guys I know."
Right.
"Remember, do you know he interviewed your mom? You know he interviewed grandma?" And the guy, gentleman, says, "Well, yeah, I mean, they made photocopies of the story. Well, Richard digitized it and sent it to me, and it's on my phone. It's an audio file." And he says, "Okay." And she goes, "Well, you just won a Ducks Unlimited wireless speaker. How'd you like to hear your mom?" Mm-hmm. And now his mom had passed 10 years earlier, right. this wonderful matriarch. And he said, "Well, it's Christmas. Of course I'd like to hear my mom's voice again."
Wow.
And so they took a family vote, because all the other brothers and sisters of this matriarch are still with us, yeah. Thank goodness. And they said, "Yeah, let's listen to this recording of Mom that was done in 1991.
Yeah.
And so they turned off the lights, they lit candles, they locked the door, they unplugged the landline, and she hit play on her phone. And this elder, who we lost years ago, started to tell a story. And she said, "There wasn't a dry eye in the house. What a divine gift you've given our family, because we miss her and we can listen to her when we're strong enough to, or when we need to." And I think I know that's why I was born. I know I was recorded to get out there, record with permission, digitize photos, DVDs, you know, hours of footage, radio interviews, and share them. With the people who really want them the most. It is a divine gift to be able to share with people and tell stories about family members that, like, "I want you to know this about your uncle. Your uncle was responsible for saving so-and-so's life." Yeah. "Or I want you to know about your dad. Your dad saved so-and-so's life." And just to give people that, you know, that hope and that grace and that light and that sweet medicine. We all deserve that.
Wow. Richard Van Camp. My meal. I have had my entree, my appetizer, my main course, and you just gave me dessert. Thank you so much for being here. Do you have a book that's coming out this year? Because it seems like every year you drop a book.
We do.
So, do you have something that's coming out this year? Where can people get at you? Where can people find you?
Well, we've got book two in the Spirit of Dead and Day series coming out in April. And it is a part of a graphic novel series. I'm so lucky, Kim, really quickly. My dream artist for this trilogy that we're working on was Highwater Press. I get to work with Scott Henderson out of Winnipeg, and our colorist Donovan Yuchuk has taken our storytelling, our visual storytelling, to a level that I certainly never could by myself. So book one is called A Blanket of Butterflies. Book two is called As I Enfold You in Petals. And I've just finished writing book three. So book two, As I Enfold You in Petals, one of the most beautiful graphic novels you will ever read, is coming out in April. So we're really excited about that. I can't wait to hold it. And yeah, I've just finished writing book three, and I'm just waiting to hear back from my agent. I'm always looking forward to being the best at what I can do with the craft. So I'm waiting for her notes, and then we're going to send it off to my publisher.
Amazing, amazing. RichardVanCamp.com, Richard Van Camp on all of the social media platforms. Thank you, thank you, thank you. As we would say, over here, Miigwech.
Oh, Chi Miigwech, Masi Cho, hi. I'm really grateful, Kim. Thank you so much. Bless you. Bless your family. Bless your beautiful heart. and stay in touch. Don't cheap out, okay? If you cheap out, I'm going to slash your tires, okay?
Okay, got it. Thankfully, I don't have a car, so it's my bicycle.
Rats.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're tuning in for the first time and you would like to hear the rest of this interview, you can go on to www.ckut.ca, go into Programming and Archives, Tuesday night, Soul Perspectives. The full show will be up at 8:31 p.m. and you can listen to it in its fullest. Other than that, tune in every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. You've been listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
You represent the King's Crown Productions. Just reminding you that Saturday, July 15th, 2023, I will be in Smith Falls representing for Reggae on the Rideau, live and direct with the original principal Charlie Chaplin, Grundy, Jakota, Hugo Barrington, Leroy Gibbons, and many more. Just remember, food and activities are going to be there. Just make sure you're there to support the scene because it's my birthday. Easy now, so we got so then. Easy now, do you know we your friend? Good job.
The Festival Internacional Nuit d'Afrique invites you to its 37th edition in Montreal from July 11th to 23rd for a worldwide musical journey. Hundreds of artists from Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America will entertain you with more than 150 concerts and activities for the whole family. Enjoy this festive and unique event rich in discoveries. Don't miss Blik Bazé from Cameroon, the famous Kora Night with Sekou Keita and Zal Sissoko, or Saïd Manaoui and Trans Nawa Fusion, and much more. Visit festivalnuitdafrique.com for the complete program.
Did you undergo a strip search at Riviere des Prairies or Bordeaux detention centers between October 11, 2016 and March 20, 2020? If so, you could receive up to $2,000 per eligible strip search. Hurry, you have until March 5th, 2024 to fill out the claim form. Visit proactio.ca/searches or call us at 1-866-369-5118 to check your eligibility and fill out a claim form.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal. Everybody listening to the Romanian radio show in Montreal, Marca Ro. Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marca Ro pe 90.3 FM CKUT.